Chapter 9. Mushrooms, and served up in a salad bowl, with orange jellies and mosaics.
Right. You can get them that way at Tortoni's.
Right, if you please. Here is a nice little Latin phrase, and rare too.
One can't be too research, or brief in one's Latin. It's getting so common, ignoratio elenchi. He has committed an ignoratio elenchi, that is to say, he has understood the words of your proposition, but not the idea. The man was a fool, you see. Some poor fellow whom you address, while choking with that chicken bone, and who therefore didn't precisely understand what you were talking about. Throw the ignoratio elenchi in his teeth, and, at once, you have him annihilated. If he dares to reply, you can tell him from Lucan, here it is, that speeches are mere anemone verbum, anemone words. The anemone, with great brilliance I, has no smell. Or, if he begins to bluster, you may be down upon him with insomnia Javis, reveries of Jupiter, a phrase which Silius Italicus, see here, applies to thoughts pompous and inflated. This will be sure, and cut him to the heart. He can do nothing but roll over and die. Will you be kind enough to write? In Greek we must have something pretty from Demosthenes, for example. Exclamation point comma D at sign N comma LT 8 B 84 less than P comma F comma J 4 a neuro fugan ka I palin macacidae. There is a tolerably good translation of it in Eudibras, for he that flies may fight again, which he can never do that's slain. Apostrophe apostrophe, in a Blackwood article nothing makes so fine a show as your Greek. The very letters have an air of profundity about them. Only observe, madam, the astute look of that epsilon. That phi ought certainly to be a bishop. Was ever there a smarter fellow than that omicron? Just twig that ta. In short, there is nothing like Greek for a genuine sensation paper. In the present case your application is the most obvious thing in the world. Wrap out the sentence, with a huge oath, and by way of ultimatum at the good-for-nothing dunder-headed villain who couldn't understand your plain English in relation to the chicken bone. He'll take the hint and be off, you may depend upon it. These were all the instructions Mr. B. could afford me upon the topic in question, but I felt they would be entirely sufficient. I was, at length, able to write a genuine Blackwood article, and determined to do it forthwith. In taking leave of me, Mr. B. made a proposition for the purchase of the paper when written, but as he could offer me only 50 guineas a sheet, I thought it better to let our society have it, than sacrifice it for so paltry a sum. Notwithstanding this niggardly spirit, however, the gentleman showed his consideration for me in all other respects, and indeed treated me with the greatest civility. His parting words made a deep impression upon my heart, and I hope I shall always remember them with gratitude. My dear Miss Zenobia, he said, while the tears stood in his eyes, is there anything else I can do to promote the success of your laudable undertaking? Let me reflect. It is just possible that you may not be able, so soon as convenient, to get yourself drowned, or choked with a chicken bone, or hung, or bitten by a but stay. Now I think me of it, there are a couple of very excellent bulldogs in the yard, fine fellows, I assure you savage, and all that indeed just the thing for your money, they'll have you eaten up, auricula and all, in less than 5 minutes, here's my watch. And then only think of the sensations. Here. I say Tom. Peter. Dick, you villain. Let out those, but as I was really in a great hurry, and had not another moment to spare, I was reluctantly forced to expedite my departure, and accordingly took leave at once somewhat more abruptly, I admit, than strict courtesy would have otherwise allowed. It was my primary object upon quitting Mr. Blackwood to get into some immediate difficulty, pursuant to his advice, and with this view I spent the greater part of the day in wandering about Edinburgh, seeking for desperate adventures adequate to the intensity of my feelings, and adapted to the vast character of the article I intended to write. In this excursion I was attended by one negro servant, Pompey, and my little lapdog Diana, whom I had brought with me from Philadelphia. It was not, however, until late in the afternoon that I fully succeeded in my arduous undertaking. An important event then happened, of which the following Blackwood article, in the tone heterogeneous, is the substance and result. Tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 equals 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 a predicament, what chance, good lady, hath bereft you thus? Comus. It was a quiet and still afternoon when I strolled forth in the goodly city of Edina. The confusion and bustle in the streets were terrible. Men were talking. Women were screaming. Children were choking. Pigs were whistling. Carts they rattled. Bulls they bellowed. Cows they lowed. Horses they neighed. Cats they caterwauled. Dogs they danced. Danced. Could it then be possible? Danced. Alas, thought I, my dancing days are over. Thus it is ever. What a host of gloomy recollections will ever and anon be awakened in the mind of genius and imaginative contemplation, especially of a genius doomed to the everlasting and eternal and continual and, as one might say, the continued, yes, the continued and continuous, bitter, harassing, disturbing, and, if I may be allowed the expression, the very disturbing influence of the serene, and godlike, and heavenly, and exalted, and elevated, and purifying effect of what may be rightly termed the most enviable, the most truly enviable, nay, the most benignly beautiful, the most deliciously ethereal, and, as it were, the most pretty, if I may use so bold an expression, thing, pardon me, gentle reader, in the world, but I am always led away by my feelings. In such a mind, I repeat, what a host of recollections are stirred up by a trifle. The dogs danced. I could not. They frisked, I wept. They capered, I sobbed aloud. Touching circumstances, which cannot fail to bring to the recollection of the classical reader that exquisite passage in relation to the fitness of things, which is to be found in the commencement of the third volume of that admirable and venerable Chinese novel, The Zhou Go Slow. In my solitary walk through the city, I had two humble but faithful companions. Diana, my poodle, sweetest of creatures. She had a quantity of hair over her one eye, and a blue ribband tied fashionably around her neck. Diana was not more than 5 inches in height, but her head was somewhat bigger than her body, and her tail being cut off exceedingly close, gave an air of injured innocence to the interesting animal which rendered her a favorite with all. And Pompey, my negro, sweet Pompey, how shall I ever forget thee? I had taken Pompey's arm. He was 3 feet in height, I like to be particular, and about 70, or perhaps 80, years of age. He had bow legs and was corpulent. His mouth should not be called small, nor his ears short. His teeth, however, were like pearl, and his large full eyes were deliciously white. Nature had endowed him with no neck, and had placed his ankles, as usual with that race, in the middle of the upper portion of the feet. He was clad with a striking simplicity. His sole garments were a stock of 9 inches in height, and a nearly new drab overcoat which had formerly been in the service of the tall, stately, and illustrious Dr. Moneypenny. It was a good overcoat. It was well cut. It was well made. The coat was nearly new. Pompey held it up out of the dirt with both hands. There were 3 persons in our party, and 2 of them have already been the subject of remark. There was a 3rd, that person was myself. I am the Signora Psyche Zenobia. I am not Suki Snobs. My appearance is commanding. On the memorable occasion of which I speak, I was habited in a crimson satin dress, with a sky blue Arabian mantlet. And the dress had trimmings of green agraffas, and 7 graceful flounces of the orange-colored auricula. I thus formed the 3rd of the party. There was the poodle. There was Pompey. There was myself. We were 3. Thus it is said there were originally but 3 Furies: Melty, Nimmy, and Eddie Meditation, Memory, and Fiddling. leaning upon the arm of the gallant Pompey, and attended at a respectable distance by Diana, I proceeded down one of the populous and very pleasant streets of the now deserted Edina. On a sudden, there presented itself to view a church, a Gothic cathedral, vast, venerable, and with a tall steeple, which towered into the sky. What madness now possessed me? Why did I rush upon my fate? I was seized with an uncontrollable desire to ascend the giddy pinnacle, and then survey the immense extent of the city. The door of the cathedral stood invitingly open. My destiny prevailed. I entered the ominous archway. Where then was my guardian angel? If indeed such angels there be. If. Distressing monosyllable. What world of mystery, and meaning, and doubt, and uncertainty is there involved in thy two letters? I entered the ominous archway. I entered, and, without injury to my orange-colored auriculas, I passed beneath the portal, and emerged within the vestibule. Thus it is said the immense river Alfred passed, unscathed, and unwetted, beneath the sea. I thought the staircase would never have an end. Round. Yes, they went round and up, and round and up and round and up, until I could not help surmising, with the sagacious Pompey, upon whose supporting arm I leaned in all the confidence of early affection, I could not help surmising, that the upper end of the continuous spiral ladder had been accidentally, or perhaps designedly, removed. I paused for breath. And, in the meantime, an accident occurred of too momentous a nature in a moral, and also in a metaphysical point of view, to be passed over without notice. It appeared to me indeed I was quite confident of the fact I could not be mistaken, no. I had, for some moments, carefully and anxiously observed the motions of my Diana. I say, that I could not be mistaken, Diana smelt a rat. At once I called Pompey's attention to the subject, and he agreed with me. There was then no longer any reasonable room for doubt. The rat had been smelled and by Diana. Heavens! Shall I ever forget the intense excitement of the moment? Alas! What is the boasted intellect of man? The rat! It was there, that is to say, it was somewhere. Diana smelled the rat. I could not. Thus it is said the Prussian Isis has, for some persons, a sweet and very powerful perfume, while to others it is perfectly scentless. The staircase had been surmounted, and there were now only three or four more upward steps intervening between us and the summit. We still ascended, and now only one step remained. One step. One little step. Upon one such little step in the great staircase of human life, how vast a sum of human happiness or misery depends. I thought of myself, then of Pompey, and then of the mysterious and inexplicable destiny which surrounded us. I thought of Pompey. Alas, I thought of love. I thought of my many false steps which have been taken, and may be taken again. I resolved to be more cautious, more reserved. I abandoned the arm of Pompey, and, without his assistance, surmounted the one remaining step, and gained the chamber of the belfry. I was followed immediately afterward by my poodle. Pompey alone remained behind. I stood at the head of the staircase, and encouraged him to ascend. He stretched forth to me his hand, and unfortunately in so doing, was forced to abandon his firm hold upon the overcoat. Will the gods never cease their persecution? The overcoat is dropped, and, with one of his feet, Pompey stepped upon the long and trailing skirt of the overcoat. He stumbled and fell. This consequence was inevitable. He fell forward, and, with his accursed head, striking me full in the breast, precipitated me headlong, together with himself, upon the hard, filthy, and detestable floor of the belfry. But my revenge was sure, sudden, and complete. Seizing him furiously by the wool with both hands, I tore out a vast quantity of black, and crisp, and curling material, and tossed it from me with every manifestation of disdain. It fell among the ropes of the belfry and remained. Pompey arose, and said no word. But he regarded me piteously with his large eyes and sighed. Ye gods, that sigh! It sunk into my heart. and the hair the wool. Could I have reached that wool, I would have bathed it with my tears, a testimony of regret. But alas, it was now far beyond my grasp. As it dangled among the cordage of the bell, I fancied it alive. I fancied that it stood on end with indignation. Thus the happy dandy flows heiress of Java bears, it is said, a beautiful flower, which will live when pulled up by the roots. The natives suspend it by a cord from the ceiling, and enjoy its fragrance for years. Our quarrel was now made up, and we looked about the room for an aperture through which to survey the city of Adena. Windows there were none. The sole light admitted into the gloomy chamber proceeded from a square opening, about a foot in diameter, at a height of about 7 feet from the floor. Yet what will the energy of true genius not effect? I resolved to clamber up to this hole. A vast quantity of wheels, pinions, and other cabalistic-looking machinery stood opposite the hole, close to it, and through the hole there passed an iron rod from the machinery. Between the wheels and the wall, where the hole lay, there was barely room for my body, yet I was desperate, and determined to persevere. I called Pompey to my side. You perceive that aperture, Pompey. I wish to look through it. You will stand here just beneath the hole so. Now, hold out one of your hands, Pompey, and let me step upon it thus. Now, the other hand, Pompey, and with its aid I will get upon your shoulders. He did everything I wished, and I found, upon getting up, that I could easily pass my head and neck through the aperture. The prospect was sublime. Nothing could be more magnificent. I merely paused a moment to bid Diana behave herself and assure Pompey that I would be considerate and bear as lightly as possible upon his shoulders. I told him I would be tender of his feelings as I tender beefsteak. Having done this justice to my faithful friend, I gave myself up with great zest and enthusiasm to the enjoyment of the scene which so obligingly spread itself out before my eyes. Upon this subject, however, I shall forbear to dilate. I will not describe the city of Edinburgh. Everyone has been to the city of Edinburgh. Everyone has been to Edinburgh, the classic Adena. I will confine myself to the momentous details of my own lamentable adventure. Having, in some measure, satisfied my curiosity in regard to the extent, situation, and general appearance of the city, I had leisure to survey the church in which I was, and the delicate architecture of the steeple. I observed that the aperture through which I had thrust my head was an opening in the dial plate of a gigantic clock, and must have appeared, from the street, as a large keyhole, such as we see in the face of the French watches. No doubt the true object was to admit the arm of an attendant, to adjust, when necessary, the hands of the clock from within. I observed also, with surprise, the immense size of these hands, the longest of which could not have been less than 10 feet in length, and, where broadest, 8 or 9 inches in breadth. They were of solid steel apparently, and their edges appeared to be sharp. Having noticed these particulars, and some others, I again turned my eyes upon the glorious prospect below, and soon became absorbed in contemplation. From this, after some minutes, I was aroused by the voice of Pompey, who declared that he could stand it no longer, and requested that I would be so kind as to come down. This was unreasonable, and I told him so in a speech of some length. He replied, but with an evident misunderstanding of my ideas upon the subject. I accordingly grew angry, and told him in plain words, that he was a fool, that he had committed an ignoramus eclenchi, that his notions were mere insummary bovis, and his words little better than an animiwaribrum. With this he appeared satisfied, and I resumed my contemplations. It might have been half an hour after this altercation when, as I was deeply absorbed in the heavenly scenery beneath me, I was startled by something very cold which pressed with a gentle pressure on the back of my neck. It is needless to say that I felt inexpressibly alarmed. I knew that Pompey was beneath my feet, and that Diana was sitting, according to my explicit directions, upon her hind legs, in the farthest corner of the room.
What could it be? Alas, I but too soon discovered. Turning my head gently to one side, I perceived, to my extreme horror, that the huge, glittering, scimitar-like minute hand of the clock had, in the course of its hourly revolution, descended upon my neck. There was, I knew, not a second to be lost. I pulled back at once, but it was too late. There was no chance of forcing my head through the mouth of that terrible trap in which it was so fairly caught, and which grew narrower and narrower with a rapidity too horrible to be conceived. The agony of that moment is not to be imagined. I threw up my hands and endeavored, with all my strength. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.